You are now tuned into This Korean Life with your hosts, Brian and Nate.
Welcome back to another episode of This Korean Life, number 115, featuring Jack Attack, Jack Lowacki. I think this is a long overdue meeting of the podcasters in Ulsan. Yeah. Eh? This is the official summit. Welcome, man.
Thanks, man.
Just one quick thing. We were just, before the mics turned on, we were talking about Canada and the situations over there. Called a friend back home yesterday. He told me about all the car thefts around Niagara in Toronto. Listen to this shit. First, he said his wife's car is one of the top five most stolen cars. So the insurance told her, you got to put this new system in your car on your own dollar. Or if your car gets stolen, we're only going to cover a certain percentage of it. On top of that, the chief of police in Toronto, ready for this shit? This is in Canada. This is Toronto. The chief of police has told the citizens, leave your keys in a box at the front door so burglars don't come into your house and hurt you and then take your keys.
Are you serious?
My friend told me, I was like, ah, oh, that's got to be bullshit. Checked it, man. That's almost a direct quote. Keep your family safe. Leave your keys in a box in front of your house. Just let them steal your car.
The last one, I was home 2 months ago there, and they had those guys. It was same thing, but it was the Jeep Grand Cherokee, and they said whatever $82,000, and that was the most easily stolen vehicle. Mm-hmm. And you thought if you're paying that much, it'd be a little more safety. But they do the thing where they pull up. There was a guy. He's got a machine. He pulls up to you next to you in the parking lot at whatever shopping mall, and he just hits a button, it unlocks your doors, boom, he goes and takes it. There's nothing about leave your keys anymore. You don't even need keys anymore.
Yeah.
And the other guys with those antennas, most people go in the front door, leave their keys at the door. They use those bridgers or whatever to transfer the signal from your key fob to the car. So one guy stands there, the other guy just goes, boom, door's open. You don't have to break into your house. it's all over the news when I was home, the whole thing.
That's wild.
Stolen cars.
Kai told me a funny one, too, from here. He said someone he knows bought a brand new Lincoln Navigator. When he bought it, the car salesman told him, he's like, man, this new car has so much like electronic shit. You need another battery. You got to install another battery.
I believe it.
Dude, you think Lincoln engineers are going to overlook their... Like, it's a $100,000 car.
A car battery used to last, the old Canadian Tire ones were 112 months or something. Mm. The batteries here are gone in 4 or 5 years because the CCTV, the black box.
Oh, okay.
That black box cuts your battery life in half here.
Yeah. Hold on.
It's amazing. So if you have anything else aftermarket, which a lot of Koreans do, I imagine it would be true.
So hold on. So this guy convinced him to get a battery, but it was, I don't know if it was five or... I think it was $5,000 or something installed, which is insane. Hold on. This guy, the car dealer had an agreement with the guy who installed the batteries. He'd get some kickbacks from it. And dude, like 200 of the Navigators that they installed the batteries on, half of them lit on fire. And the insurance investigator, like, dude, what are you doing?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Huh. Wild. Wild, wild, wild. I'm glad my Avante is still cruising.
Did we interrupt the first paddleboard down the river this morning or no?
No, not yet. It's too cold.
You got the wetsuits, no?
I do have a wetsuit, but it's only a halvesy.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a wuss when it comes to cold water. And the river is way too cold yet. So
I think a couple of winters in Winnipeg will
get you back in shape. That's the reason, probably one of the reasons why I haven't lived back home in 10 years.
Dude, that's one of the most adventurous things I've seen here. I mean, we took the little rowboats out one day under Tewa River, but where do you start when you do the stand-up paddleboard?
I drop usually in Guyon. Just because
all the way back there.
Yeah, because I started before that, but the river is so shallow. Like
I was going to say, yeah. Through Mugochon's pretty shallow, no? You got to get some rocks in the ass through there.
Mugochon, I don't go through Mugochon.
How do you get?
I drop the
Sumbawi or whatever is out there.
Yeah, Yeah, so before that song
bar. Ah, yeah, shit.
So you
okay.
go all the way to like towards Eunice.
Ah, yes.
And start over there. So my first trip was over there, and I ended up carrying it for, you know, for the majority of the part.
Just walking like, through the river.
Yeah, basically. Because it's like ankle deep until you get to the point where.
The big rocks?
Chunsang. Around Chunsang.
Yeah. yeah.
It starts to get deep. But even, and even so, there's the bridge that goes from. Into Guyongli, the first bridge goes into Guyongli. Right underneath that, it's again ankle deep, so you have to dismount and just carry it over. So I just decided I'm going to drop it there to avoid all the carrying.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's that, I don't know, I guess it depends on the water level, but sometimes I can ride my bike across, it's almost like a footbridge.
Yeah,
that's you know what I mean? It's like a little, it spills over kind of like a waterfall sometimes. But how long does it take you to get... from there, you go right up to Bangajin, right to the ocean?
No, I can't. I'll tell you a story.
Was I listening to the podcast that when you got there and the Coast Guard was chasing you or something?
They took me in. So I usually start in Guyong, and I go all the way to the massive overpass, the big new bridge that goes from
San Diego,
that's it. And I stop before that. That's the farthest I go. But then there's another leg that goes to the right, and you can go up it. But it doesn't. It's really beautiful. I forget what the neighborhood is, but it's really gorgeous. The you've got like yellow sand bottom on the river, and it's just like a really nice habitat with some neighborhoods very quiet. It doesn't feel like it's in a city. It kind of feels like in a countryside somewhere. So I usually go back and end my trip there. But you know, being adventurous, I wanted to go and get myself through the bay and into Bangajin, into Ilsan Beach. And so I just started...
Which, for those that don't know, like, that's going through the loading docks and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, with 300 meters
I'm
ships.
I'm passing these giant ships, you know, all these freaking car loaders and stuff. And I see guys sitting on top of the construction workers just looking down on me. And I must look like a freaking ant because the bridge is massive. Like, when you're sitting on the water and you're looking up at the bridge, it looks something from you know... Tolkien, like you've got Lord of the Rings stuff with these massive pillars. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So I pass and I see Coast Guard coming up to me on a boat. I'm like, oh shit, I'm in trouble. And they're saying, oh, no, you can't go here. I'm like, oh, okay, crap. And I didn't want to paddle back. So I figured, okay, can I go like to the shore and just dismount there? And, you know, they didn't say anything. So I did that. It took me a while to get myself on the shore. And I finally did pull up the board, packed everything up. And as I was about to leave the premise, a car pulls up and he's like, are you working here? I'm like, no, I just got off the water.
Does it look like I'm working here?
Yeah. I'm standing in a wetsuit.
He's like, is the normal dismounting spot?
So he says, you can't be here. I'm like, okay, I'm leaving. He's like, no, you're going to come with me. I'm like, oh, crap. Okay. So I get in the car and this was like a 3-hour investigation. You know, a guy in a wetsuit and like, I don't know, half a dozen police officers or
come on.
Yeah, seriously. They took me in and... Because this was...
But you must have dismounted in like the Hyosung whatever.
It was... Well, it's private property. Right? It belongs to customs.
Oh, okay.
And so that was the problem. I guess if I had remained in the water, the...
giving them the finger?
The water police just told me to get lost.
Yeah.
But because I got on land, then, you know, there's maritime laws... And the laws of land, which are different.
Are you coming from Japan or Guyongli?
I was coming from... They were asking me, like, where did you come from?
Japan.
They were asking me everything. Where do you work? I had to provide them with my phone numbers, my work details. They called my wife.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you say, wife must have been happy with that one.
To make sure that I'm not some Russian spy coming in from God knows where. So I was there for 3 hours. Eventually, they let me go. But,
They check your cameras, and that probably didn't help, right?
They didn't. I was hiding the camera because I knew they, you know, if they wanted to check it, they'll be. Just, I didn't want to be stuck for another 5 hours trying to figure out how to.
What a nightmare!
It was funny.
How do you typically get back? You rent a bike or whatever, or scooter or whatever.
One of the T-bikes. Those are pretty well. I've got my phone. My wife's. My phone is registered under my wife's name. I don't exist in this country because it's so much easier. I don't have to worry about all that stuff. So it's under my wife's name, so I can, register a credit card on my phone.
I don't exist.
I don't, essentially.
That's why you get the 3-hour investigation.
I'm a ghost. We have no trace of this guy. Your stand-up paddleboard's inflatable, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I can deflate it and then just pack it up. And it,
you got a little pump? You got a, you blown it?
It's a pump.
Where'd you get it?
I got it online through Instagram from a guy who doesn't, he's not there anymore, but I got the board for about 300, I don't know, 50,000 won or so. Mm.
What is it like compared to a regular board?
Well,
is it stable and lighter?
No. It's a lot more buoyant, bouncy, I guess. So you can't really do surfing on it, I don't think. Regular board is, you know, it's solid.
Sure.
On this one, if you're standing on it the way you would on a surfboard, you're a lot more likely to keel over because it's just, it bends like the front and the back bend like you would expect on a wave. Well, a regular board is just kind of.
Okay.
Do you it anywhere else or only the Tewa?
I went to the beach. Where did we go? I took my son down to Songjeong. Oh, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
That's popular. That's the surfing beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That gets packed. It's so busy over there. My goodness. Not a great place. But
a lot of people on the beach just doing the drills. All right, lay down. Yeah. Right, get up on your feet. Yeah. All right, lay down.
Yeah. And the ocean is, you know, like the ocean is in the summer. It's just full of people. And you've got like board upon board upon board. You got to watch out not to hit anybody on the head.
Those guys are making a killing though, eh? They've
created their own niche, man.
Yeah, it's super busy.
I'm surprised the guys in Jinnah, how good they do. Mm-hmm. And then he brings guys to Bali or whatever in the winter, and he brings groups. And they've made their own little business there for sure.
Fantastic. Stand-up paddleboard is not your only outdoor adventuring. You used to be a rock climber.
Yeah, I used to. I haven't rock climbed in ages.
Yeah.
Simply because most of the people left. All the people that I was rock climbing with just went back home.
Yeah.
And then I just got busy with other things.
Have you ever tried the indoor?
I did. Yeah. There are a couple of good indoor climbing gyms. One is in near Lotte Mart.
Yeah.
It's on like the sixth floor.
Yeah.
I've never actually been inside. I looked up the times online and it said open on Saturday. I went over. It was closed, of course. So I ended up going to Songnamdong. There is one. It's a really cool one. It's not too big, but it's decent. It's nice. So I went, took my kids there.
Yeah, my kid for summer vacation, winter vacation. My kids go to one over here, up climbing gym. And it's, I thought like, man, how does this guy stay? How does he stay in business? Like people just come, they master the course, and but he's always switching. They're always switching the rocks and stuff around. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
The ones out at Yeongnam Alps there. What's that place called?
Yeah.
That place is awesome.
The outdoor.
Outdoor wall there is just phenomenal. That's great. That's
crazy. I switched rock climbing into mountain climbing. I did a lot.
You do lots of hiking too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I did a lot of that stuff.
You've done all the big peaks here?
Almost, yeah.
Yeah?
Almost.
Any favorite one?
Any memorable? I think is a pretty challenging. The biggest one.
What's the one where you go to the top of it and there's like an old wooden shack and you can sit down and eat some udon?
That's the biggest one in the Yeongnam Alps. It's 1,255 meters.
That was a really, that was a cool experience for me. I had a Korean friend who picked me up. He's like, let's go hiking, brought me up there. And it was just like, it seemed like it was out of a storybook or out of a movie, like a real cool setting, man.
It was really busy there a couple of weeks ago when the snow came.
Yeah.
And the whole country, or the southern part of the country, all raced out there for all the pictures. Everybody's Instagram was full of pictures from up there. What's your frame of mind when you're doing, I notice when you post them, it's usually by yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's your frame of mind when you decide I'm going and, or I've seen you post before, does anybody want to climb or does anybody want to go, right?
Yeah.
But you like the solo missions or?
I just like to stay sane, you know.
But that's so, like a meditational kind of.
Yeah, it gets me away from all the other crap. And I don't know. Have you ever meditated?
Have I meditated?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When I was a Dunist, I was a new dad. My daughter was like, I don't know, 4. And I was just coming to grips with fatherhood and everything else. Learning, because, you know, nobody tells you.
Yeah.
Especially as a dad. Like, as a mother, the way my cousin described it, you know, as a mom, when you give birth, it's like, okay, hello, nice to see you after 9 months. But as a dad, first that you hold your kid, it's like, Ooh. Hello, I'm your father. Nice to meet you. Like, you know, it's a very different experience. So,
especially in Korea.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't get to be there during it's birth, like, right?
Times 10. Not even be there, just support and and everything. I mean, it's just you.
Yeah.
So, and mother-in-law, if you're lucky. Or unlucky.
Oh, my God.
So I was doing my master's, and I was studying, and I was being a dad, and I was running left and right. I was working at UNIST. I was working, like, a bunch of private jobs. So I was basically leaving home early in the morning, coming back at 10 p.m. after being, you know, driving all over the city.
Burning the candle at both ends. Yeah.
Yeah, and studying at the same time. And it's just, I was losing my mind. So I started meditating, because I figured, okay, I gotta try something.
Sure.
And I had moments. I would go into my office in the morning, and my desk was a mess. There was just paperwork everywhere. I was, you know, doing my master's and taking care of my lessons. And I had moments, mornings, when I would come in and it was just tunnel vision. I would sit down, and within seconds I knew what I was doing, and I would spend like the next 30 minutes just drumming away at the keyboard and produce like 2 pages within 30 minutes going, wow, what the hell happened? So I'm a firm believer that meditation kind of, I don't know, it centers you. It helps you
balance. Whatever.
Balance, yeah.
Or it's focus. Yeah, you can focus. You can focus.
It helps with the focus. So hiking to me is something like that.
Yeah.
When I get out there, the when you start going through the forest, and I usually go in the morning to avoid the crowds. You know, I wake up at like 4. I'm on the mountain by 5 or 6, and it's, you know, usually dark. There's nobody there. I start encountering people when I start coming down around noon, and there's just, you know, people with their freaking tunes blasting on their tiny little radios.
If you, this here's a scene from one of my favorite picture books, and it's exactly that. The paper boy goes out in the morning, delivers all his shit, and on his way back, he's like, oh, there's a neighbor. And he sees the lights on in the house. It's a great feeling, man. It's a really nice feeling.
I remember climbing. I did Fuji twice.
Did you?
And I remember you climb up to see the sunrise, which it's not. I mean, the sun rises there maybe like twice a year. They forget to tell you that when you're going for the sunrise. But the good part is when you're coming down at 9 o'clock, there's a bazillion people going up, and you're like,
yeah.
Okay, I went up with, you know, I was in Tokyo this afternoon, and now in the middle of the night, I'm here. It's the Milky Way, and I, you know, met a few new people, and there might be, whatever, 50, 100 people on the whole damn mountain, but God, now it's way worse. But when I went, coming down is just like, holy shit, man. I wouldn't even have went halfway up. I would have turned around just from the insanity.
Yeah.
So I like that. That's the only way to do it in Korea.
Yeah.
Go early or don't go.
Absolutely.
The sleep in and leave at 11, get there at 12.
Oh, that's part of the experience, man. You gotta wait in traffic for 6 hours.
Not to mention, like, when you know, it gets dark pretty early in Korea. So when you start coming down and, you know, the light starts to change, you're risking a trip over
I agree.
A broken ankle, yeah.
On the ground, especially in the forest.
We brought mom and dad to Gaji-san there last year, the year before, and I thought, like, man, we're pushing it here. If somebody blows a knee or an ankle, like, what? We got a problem, man.
Speaking of sunrise or the sun, dude, Niagara's due for a full solar eclipse.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's April, coming up April 8th. Just, again, talking to my buddy. He said everyone's, all businesses, everything's going to be canceled. Like, for the day. Because he said, like, he said they're expecting a billion people to go there, man. Yeah. They said, don't come to work, don't do nothing. Said, just shut the whole city down. Open the restaurants and the hotels. It's going to be a full eclipse.
Speaking of the 4 a.m. stuff, tell me a little about the fishing. I don't know if you guys look like you're enjoying it at 4 a.m. when you're whipping the boys into the boat there, and or I think that'd be awesome. But shit, that's early, man, to be going to Busan. And tell me a little bit about the fishing. I love watching it. It's cool.
Well, Eli was the man to arrange it, and like I said, he was a very meticulous guy, so he would arrange it. Yeah, we'd head out 4 o'clock because the fishing boats would leave around, I guess, 5:30, 6, depending on the season, right? Sunrise. And so it's an hour or so, 40-minute ride from Ulsan to the dock. And then they leave around 5:30. You get up. It varies on the fishing boats, but there were 3 or 4 fishing boats. Some of the captains were friendlier to two expats than others. So we stick around, stuck with those two that that were a lot more welcoming. And I think it's 60 or 70,000 won for the boat ride per person, and then you can rent a rod right on the spot for 10,000. So it's about 70 or 80,000 for the trip. And then
how long do you go for?
4 or 5 hours.
Oh, wow.
It's until noon. So the guy runs like two trips. It's
very reasonable.
Yeah. He runs from, I think, 6 a.m. until noon. Then he comes back to the shore, takes a break, and then he takes out another bunch of people from noon until whatever.
That's just for people paying to go fish, or is he doing his own? Is he throwing nets out and
catching stuff? No. It's just
fishing charters. Yeah. Just like a charter.
So is that a big thing in Busan? Like, is that common? Is there 20 boats going every morning and full of people?
Boats, yeah.
Really?
3 or 4 boats, I think. And I'm sure there are other spots that do the same thing, but this was the spot that we used to go to all the time, and same captain. Yeah.
I'd love to. I look at my brother fishing back home, and it's just, it's like the highlight of his day. Or even if he just goes out for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, he goes and fishes. It's
very different. Like, I used to fish back home, like in Whiteshell. And you know, you catch different fish, but lake fishing is very different. You know, it's a lot more chilled out and whatever. On the boat,
somebody was puking last time.
One
of your last videos, I thought somebody was puking.
you got to get yourself the motion sickness meds, because I'm also like, if I get sick on the boat, I'm done. So you got to get that stuff in your system 2 hours before, or you're done for. Last time I was there, I was feeling sick. I did take the motion sickness medicine, but I think too late. Yeah. So by the time we were on the boat, I was already...
You're throwing it up.
Not throwing it up, but I was... Oh, yeah, I was.
Okay. Is it rough out there usually?
No, it's not too rough. I mean, it depends on the day.
So what does he do? He drives out an hour and then just anchors or parks and floats around and you just cast?
He drops his sonar in to check whether there are any fish or not. We spend 30 minutes and then he decides if it's good fishing, then we stay.
So you're going to catch regardless?
Usually. Not always. There were a few times where people left empty-handed. But so if there's like 4 or 5 of us, you know, between the 5 of us, we'll catch like 10 fish.
And what are you catching?
Mostly macro, Spanish mackerel. There were a few times where you catch tuna, but that was early in the morning. So one of my buddies caught like 2 big tuna, nicely sized. But it was within... We literally got out there at 6 a.m. in the span of maybe 10 minutes... 30 minutes in early in the morning, he was catching. There were tunas left and right, and he caught 2 big tunas. But after that, it's mostly Spanish mackerel. I've seen a guy catch a blowfish, beautiful fish, by the way. But he was like poking, like, get that thing off the boat.
Although those are killing us. Any other weird fish?
No, just those ones.
No sharks or?
No. I think it's the waters around here are too cold for sharks. No.
Well, I don't know, but there were shark sightings.
Yeah.
I think last summer there was a couple really close in Busan or something, or whatever.
I haven't seen it. But yeah, the only fish that we... I think you can, depending on the season, you can go Spanish mackerel, I think, or... Actually, I don't know. But yeah, depending on the time of the year, you can go for Spanish mackerel, tunas, I think, early in the morning, and then you've got the rockfish.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also go fishing for nakchi.
Have you ever done that?
No.
I did that in the Philippines. It was hilarious.
Was it?
But they're just out in those like little canoes, and they have the two arms with the lights, and they put all the lights out because the lights attract them to the top.
Right.
And there'd be one guy scooping them, and the other ones you just drop down these things, snacks, and they have like 30 hooks on them on each one, and you just dig them.
Isn't Philippines famous for like dynamite fishing too?
I don't know. What, squid fishing wasn't very interesting.
What do you do with them?
Sushi?
Quay or fillets? Or?
No, I would chop them up and just fillet them, freeze them up in the freezer, or eat them fresh. And
those two tunas, you could use it like Jim Carrey, man. Just use them like nunchucks.
The tunas, my buddy, he ate them. As soon as he got home, he was posting pictures on Facebook or whatever, showing off his...
That's a hell of a catch.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a catch. I think, does fishing provide the same kind of mental release or meditation that... The hiking and stand-up paddleboarding?
No, it doesn't.
It's more of a fish or more of a...
It's different because you're hanging out with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. You're on a boat. It's something to do. It's fun to be up, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
The hiking thing is... The longest hike I did was 15 hours, I think.
Where is that, up north?
No, it was here. But I climbed Gajisan, basically. But, you know, like, there's the mountain ridge, right? Bektudigan, right? And so all the mountains are connected. So there's, like, you've got Gajisan, and behind it is Unmunsan.
Okay.
And so I got up to Gajisan. I parked in front of it. Like, I forget the temple name, but there's a temple.
And you can, and they sell little shit there. Yeah.
So I climbed the mountain, got to the top, and I started climbing down thinking, okay, I'm going to climb Unmunsan. So I'm going to hit two mountains.
Yeah.
And so by the time I started climbing down Gajisan, I'm like, okay, shit, I'm committed now. So I ended up climbing down, and I climbed all the way to Unmunsan, which is the second mountain. And man, I was dying. By the time I had to climb the second one, I was dying. And you know, you're not going all the way down, right? Yeah. It's like, I don't know, halfway down the mountain. But I was climbing up the second one and dying. And I got up to the second mountain, and I realized, oh, crap, I got to go back.
Because
that's where my car is. So I climbed back down, and I climbed Gajisan the second time and back down. And man, after that, it was great. Like, by the time I got up to Gajisan the second time around, it started to snow. And euphoria, I got hit by adrenaline or something, but I was dying. There was a guy in front of me while I was climbing up the second time, and he had this massive backpack on his back, like 70 liters.
Yeah.
And he was climbing with a monk, a female monk. Yeah. She was bald. And she saw me, she turns around, she's like, oh, hello, starts speaking to me in English. I'm like, whoa. She says,
am I dead?
Yeah, no, I'm like, where am I? And he was taking just baby steps because of the weight of his backpack. And she, turns out that she was a monk in Vancouver, apparently, but she was visiting her son, who's living here, and he was getting ready for a hike with his buddies across the Bektudigan. And so he set the pace with his baby steps, and I just followed along. I just copied it.
Yeah.
I ended up going up to the top, and just, I was feeling, I don't know, adrenaline and whatever, but all the pain just disappeared. It started to snow. I felt so happy. Euphoria hit me. I was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. But yeah, it was just the top of the mountain was covered in snow. I called up my wife. I'm like, man, you should be here. It's so gorgeous. I felt like I was high.
Sure.
But yeah, I got down. I got home, and like for the next week, I couldn't walk. My calves were killing me.
That's like that might be what the ultra marathoners kind of experience, right? You hit 80 kilometers in a day, and then
like the pain was gone. At the top of the mountain, I was just ecstatic. It was the
body's best. An amazing thing.
Yeah,
it's an amazing.
It wasn't so great the week after that, but
Oh, that's awesome, man! What any other adventures planned for the coming or this summer, I guess? No. Just the same old.
You never tried that Seoul to Busan bike trail?
That's on my hit list.
No, I haven't. No. I just picked up a bike recently, and it's not a great bike. You know, I'm a cheapskate. I'm trying to do everything bargain. So I picked up this bike that's kind of my size, I think. Not quite, and it's a speed bike. And I fixed it up a little bit, but I don't think it's good enough to take me on extensive rides. You know, I just got it from my son. My son's got a bike, so like, I got to take the kid out sometimes so we can go for little rides around the city.
Well, shout out to Ryan Estrada. I don't know how he does that thing, but man, he picked up some old ancient bike. Yeah. He gets it fixed every town or whatever on the way. But I mean, I got a Cannondale. My wife and I got it when we got married, and I went up with the kids 2 weeks ago. We did about 25K. My ass was sore for the next week, that's man.
The thing, man.
Like, how how does that? He goes from writing comics and writing books to, like, you know, a 10-day trip up to Seoul or something. Like, I wouldn't be able to walk. I wouldn't be able to sit on that bike unless it calluses over in a couple days. Like.
Yeah.
Man, we went for one day, and I couldn't walk the next week.
Yeah. Get a nice cushy sofa seat.
Oh, and that's I think that's it too. Eh? They got I don't know. Yeah,
I see those big pads, and I'm like, my bike seat's only this big. Do I need this? How does it even work? You would just bend over the guy. I don't know, man.
The guy I ride with sometimes he's a Korean, so obviously he's got every special tool or whatever. But his pants have like a built-in pad.
It
looks like he's wearing a diaper kind of.
Yeah.
So maybe that's I'd love to do that though.
Man. Do you
I think you start at Incheon.
Yeah.
And go right down to Busan. I watched on Monday I watched a guy and it was so inspiring, man. I think it was 30 days and he biked across Europe. Oh, it looks so good, man.
I would love to do it on a motorcycle, man. My buddy did a trip from basically around the peninsula on a bike, on a motorcycle.
Yeah. And it was, there was a name for the trail too, not Cabo. Start with the C. There's like a trail. Some people hike it.
Portugal, Spain.
Starts with the C. You know what I'm talking about?
Camino de.
Yeah.
Camino de Santiago.
Yes, that is it.
Yeah, it's a pilgrimage. A lot. Oh, yeah.
So nice. Just, man, the guy was cruising. He'd stop like, oh, it's too hot. He just stops. Everywhere he stopped was just, it was incredible. If it was the forest or the architecture, stop, go take a dip in the lake. It looked really nice.
All you need is the time.
Yeah. Just carve out 6 weeks out of my head.
I don't know about you guys, but. Jesus, if I can scrounge up a day to myself. Yeah.
So I was going to ask, you got, what are your kids now? Is she in middle school or
grade six? My middle school. Just started second grade. My son's in fifth elementary. So.
Our boys are the same age.
Yeah.
Do you share any of the outdoor adventure kind of spirit and
I try.
Activities with them, or how does that go over?
They're growing up. They used to go out on the paddleboard with me a little bit. I took them out to the Tewa a couple of times. Even my daughter, right now, she's a teenager. Yep. She's 13, so it's like she's got her own thing. Tough. My son still, but just the other week, I realized he didn't want to hold my hand anymore. I'm like, oh
yeah, yeah.
Like, are you too old? He's like, yep.
It's so funny, all the different stages. Like, at one point you're like, oh god, I just wish this kid could just walk by himself, or I wish they would just talk, and then they start talking, you're like, oh, okay, now it's time to shut up. Now it's time to, you know. But it's they grow up fast, man.
Yeah,
they grow up fast. Hold on, your son's born 2013.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. January 25th, I think.
Oh, so he's.
The other day, I'm like, Liam, when is your birthday? He's like, what? You don't know my birthday?
I got a lot of shit on my plate. He's born at the beginning of the year. My son's right at the end of 2013. What do you think about your daughter going to middle school in Korea? How is it so far?
She's, I don't know. My daughter's a tough case. She's kind of a very, I don't know, creative. She's got a creative mind. She's not like the other kids. That's one of the things that always worried me, you know. Will my kids adapt to the life here?
They're going to smush the creativity out of them and just...
Yeah, but she's doing fine. But the problem is, you know, like I hear confounding stories from different dads living in Korea, expat dads, right? And it's always stories of like, oh, my kids are having problems, my kids are adjusting just fine. And I don't know where my kids fit in. Like, I want them to adjust, but I don't really know. And, you know, your kids have lives of their own. And that's one of the things that drives me kind of crazy, because, like, they will have their own lives and you will not be a part of those lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's sad but satisfying at the same time.
Sure.
So right now my son seems to have made some friends and he's going out with them. Today, I think he's like hitting out at 12:30.
Beautiful.
So he's doing all right. My daughter, she, a few weeks ago, she went out to eat with friends and she came back 20 minutes later. I'm like, you're done? She's like, yeah. And then later I hear
7-Eleven Lamian?
No, Lamian. They went out to have like.
Tanguru?
No.
Maratang. Maratang,
yeah, maratang.
One of the.
And she comes back 20 minutes. Suspects. I'm like, you're done? She's like, yeah. And my wife told me that apparently her friend said something to her and she just left. My daughter's the kind of person who's just like, if something happens that's not to your liking, she just leaves.
I don't got to deal with
just
this.
Just ditches
shit.
People. Yeah, that's her attitude. I'm like, Jesus, you're not going to make a lot of friends with that. But she's fine staying by herself in her room. She's very artistic. She draws. She's really good at drawing.
Cool.
And she does all those things. But she has friends. She hangs out. But not like the Korean kids. She doesn't go to any Hagwons. She refuses to go to any Hagwons other than art. She doesn't want to do math. She doesn't want to do any of this stuff. So she,
good for her.
She does a lot of like graphic design and drawing. And she's getting good at it. But that's her thing.
I'm curious. Because Gina's really artistic and... not so interested in the academic parts. what's the balance there? How does it, I mean, in a totally academically focused society or school or all the high one stuff, is it hard on the self-esteem and at school if you're not keeping up in the basic core subjects? Or
honestly, I don't know. Like, so my wife's sister does a lot of tutoring, and so my daughter goes on the weekend. She goes over to her house in Gyeongju, and she gets some math tutoring some from her. But she doesn't want to go to Hagwons. And so I think that's one of the problems, because, you know, all Korean kids go to Hagwons, and that's where they have friends, and my daughter kind of gets left behind in that aspect. But academically, she's doing okay, I think. We've never pushed our kids to spend hours and hours in Hagwons, because it's insane. Don't understand.
That's why I'm looking for some insight, because that's where we are. They don't go to Hagwons, but then it's how much do we pressure the academic side of it when... Yeah. I don't know. You don't want to get left behind. You don't want them this, but she plays hockey and she's doing soccer now, and that she gets some friends and stuff from that. But yeah, that's my mental debate is how much
academic
is she good enough? Does she need a little more help, or can we provide that help at home, or does she need outside?
I got a student I'm teaching now in the heart of Okdong. You know, that's the hub for education, or the best education, I guess.
Arguably,
yeah. But he was saying he just started middle school. Oh, shit. And he was telling me, or I obviously ask him, you know, how's the workload? How do you balance your regular school homework with academies and whatnot? And he said he has no homework from school.
No, school is not the problem. The problem is the academies.
Yeah.
Well, didn't school used to load shit on too?
No.
Oh.
My kids come home and they never have any homework.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible.
They never have any homework. That's where you...
Because that would knock homework. The academies out of business.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, no, I was surprised.
No, it's kind of fun and enjoyable.
Yeah. But I was surprised to hear that. But yeah, then he gets...
The stress is...
Destroy my Hagwon.
With Hagwons, man.
Yeah, no, I will never understand the Hagwon culture. It's so bizarre.
I like the in the beginning, the people who went to Hagwons would have, you know, gone on to get better jobs or get into better universities. But now when everyone does it, no one's getting ahead.
Yeah, but for the better jobs, like, you know, Korea is such a densely populated nation, right? And with there is a small group of companies that are considered the Ivy League companies. Mm. I used to teach in S-Oil. Mm. I used to teach the executive officers there. And I had a conference. So, like, S-Oil is owned by Aramco. Mm. And I think they own the majority share. So, basically, S-Oil is in Saudi Arabian
company,
right? And I think Korean Oil or Korean Air owns the other part. Okay. And so they had a executive, a CEO from Korean Air working in S-Oil. Mm. And I talked to a very smart guy. I talked to him. And so we had a conversation on the hiring policies of S-Oil. He said they only hire people from the Sky universities.
Really?
Just the three. I'm like, okay, so you've got KAIST, which is number four in Korea. Mm, right. And I said, let's say you've got a person from the third most respected university in Korea, and then you've got one from the fourth most respected university in Korea, and the one from the fourth has just better qualifications, better, you know, university scores. Mm. Who would you hire? I said, we'd still hire the one from the third one because they're from the Sky. So it doesn't really matter what your performance is, how good you are. If you don't fit the demographic, then you will not get the best.
That's got to change.
But that's the Korea with the Sumbae, Hubae, all the alumni and the connections and the network.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it goes all the way to the hockey teams. It's insane. Yeah. It permeates every aspect of their culture. Which university? Who do you know? Who do you know?
And it's awesome if you're in, and it sucks if you're out.
You know? Yeah. So all the
I don't know. I think a lot of guys who are in don't necessarily want to be in. I mean, their parents, you know, forcing me. The girl at my apartment now, she's back. She went to Minjo foreign language high school there, and she came back and said, "Are you back? Shouldn't you be in? This is a weird time to be back. 2 weeks into the semester." Said, yeah, I'm going to study for the Sunung one more year and try and get into Yonsei again. Mm. And I was like, do you want that, or your dad wants that? Or your mom? Or like, who really wants that? Because it's not a logical decision to go back and just study for one test, which is a crapshoot. And you don't even know if you're going to get it. If you miss one question, you don't get in again. Mm. So I don't know if it might be a blessing in disguise. There's more people that don't get in there that are doing things they actually enjoy or want to than...
Dude. Donna's Donuts.
The guys who get in.
God bless her. Eh? God bless her. She said, give the big middle finger to the system. Wrote her GED and is loving life.
You said it's hard to come by a free day. Busy guy. Maybe can you tell us a little bit about the Hagwon industry? Or, I mean, we're sitting here talking about it. What is it like being on the inside? You've gone from three different variations, right? Super magnificent place there.
Yeah.
And then and now the third one. Is this the third one? Is that right?
Yeah. But I mean, it's the same. Like we started our Hagwon with a franchise. We got a franchise, Shane English, and that's a acquired franchise. And we started our first school. It's the same program. We're just at a third location right now. So the first one we started was, we were there for, I don't know, four years, something like that. And then because our program is elementary and we have a kindergarten program, which is a full blown kindergarten program that we have. So my wife decided that it was a mutual agreement, but she wanted to basically implement the kindergarten portion. We used to teach elementary and then had some like after school kindy, but she wanted to have a full kindergarten program because that's what we have. That's what we kind of paid for. So, that massive building came on the market and she jumped at the occasion because it's a really good location, right?
You bought Harry Potter's castle.
We didn't buy it.
It's a fabulous place and building and location.
It's cursed though, man.
Location.
It's cursed. I'll tell you the story. It's cursed. So when we moved to that big place, it was the same program.
Yeah.
But we just moved to a bigger place. Right. And we opened up. We invested a shitload of money right before COVID. We opened up a month before COVID or 3 weeks and then COVID hit and we were...
It was February 2020.
Like 2 or 3 weeks later, we had to shut down. We were closed for 3 months immediately. So that put a damper on the fun.
How do you get through that mentally? I mean, that's got to be...
Oh, dude, my wife went through hell and back. And she's and just... For the past, basically, since that's what I mean, the place is cursed. Since opening up in 2000, it's just been a non-stop emotional roller coaster for her and so for our family as a result for the past 4 years. Yeah. And it's still ongoing, man. She's just dealing with like depression and all kinds of.
Sure.
So we closed that down for a bunch of reasons and we scaled down finally. And I think right now she's kind of. Able to cope with all the shit that happened over the past 4 years.
Sure.
And she's slowly recovering from it. And we've scaled down. We still have the same, it's the same program, the same Shane, but we've scaled down student-wise, we're probably, I don't even know if we have a quarter of the students that we used to have at the big place. Yeah, and we cut down on staff, obviously, because I'm like, why do we have so many people working for us when we're not even pulling in the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
the finances to cover all that stuff.
Well, I think it's a better thing overall. Even if you had more students or you had more income, dude. When we worked at What and Why, you see just the paperwork you have to do
and it doesn't stop. It's the paperwork, and the more clients you get, you know, kids, the more work you have, and it just doesn't stop. I have a buddy who works. At a Hagwon in Okdom, and that Hagwon's been there for, I don't know, since the beginning of Okdom. Like the woman that runs it has been there for like, I don't know, 11 or 20 years or something stupid like that. And I think it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest Hagwon in Okdom.
Yeah. Wow.
And I talk to him on a regular basis and he says, man, she's there, but she says it's just nonstop. You deal with one problem and another one arises.
Oh, there's no free lunch over there, man.
So... As a Hagwon director, you know, because I think as teachers, we always presume, oh, Hagwon directors are scum. And yes, there are some scummy Hagwon directors, no question about it. But I think a lot of times people forget that there's a lot of work that goes into running a Hagwon.
Sure.
The stress, the amount of stress that as a director you deal with is just immense. Like, you know, parents are so demanding, especially in Okdom.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Yeah, and then they pick on the smallest things. And it's the stupidest things. Like, oh, the other kid pushed my kid in your van, so I'm gonna take my kid out because of that. Like,
yeah, no,
it's just
I got a taste of that at What and Why. Not so much bickering, but just the amount of paperwork. And man, teachers would stay overnight. They'd have like jajangmyeon party and they'd stay overnight. Like, you know, they work all day, stay overnight, like fill out all the new papers to
we don't requirements do any of that, and shit. Man, I think we're very good too. Like most of our teachers, including Korean and foreign stuff, we never pushed our teachers. Probably because of like, you know, I was on the receiving end of that, and so right now I know. Like I always tell my wife, like, listen, us foreigners, I know this is Korea and all that stuff, but we expect our teachers to do the work that they're paid for. Mm. But I would never expect them to do overtime and like come to some parties on the weekend. Sure. Mandatory. There's no such thing. We're having dinner. If you want to come. If not, that's fine. There is no forced alcohol consumption after hours.
But it was, you know? This was to like to fill out paperwork for a new whatever. But
it just seems like they just can't figure out that streamlining part of it.
Yeah.
To just streamline it. But I wonder now with the AI stuff, if that could knock a whole bunch of that paper, because it is just endless amounts of paperwork. Mm. And even the papers the kids come home with. Yeah. Hey, I don't need all these papers, man. Yeah. Keep them. I'm okay. You don't need to update me every day what's going on.
Yeah.
If there's a problem, let me know. Otherwise, let them have fun.
Another unpaid Hagwon director work is when parents call you.
Yeah.
At night. When we were living here, man, we had friends who owned a Hagwon in Okdong. We had a nice dinner, 9 p.m. The wife had to take a 40-minute call on the veranda out here. Just, my son's having problems in math, Hagwon. What do you think? Like, I'm not your psychologist, lady. What are you doing?
Yeah. I told my wife many times, why don't you set working hours? Just don't pick up phone calls after 6 p.m.
You lose students. You the mom's
but,
mom's
but then, yeah, but then you're that. Shooting yourself in the foot. Yeah, yeah.
You can't do that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't stop at Hagwon's. My wife's at the public school, and it's the same.
Yeah.
It's gotten a little bit better now with the recent rule changes, whatever, 3-4 months ago, because of the suicides or the teachers demanded they were striking.
Did something come of that?
You can't call them on the weekend or something, or you have to call the hotline to report, and the teacher can get your message when she gets to work or something. But I remember driving to weddings on a Sunday or something, and some mom phones, and I'm like, just tell her sorry. I'm in the middle of something. I can't. Yeah. I'm like, I can. Give me the phone. I'll tell her. Same thing. You know, it's a 20-minute call. It's a 30-minute call. And then they wonder. But, man, it's – yeah, it doesn't stop in academy.
You wonder why people are stressed, man. There's no disconnect from your, work.
What's the entitlement for the – for the Ajumma, it's like, where do they think
it's a single,
they can just put all the demands on?
I think it's just demand and supply. Like,
that's why they need five. It. If you have five kids, you couldn't keep up to all of them. You got one kid, you can like micromanage every minute of their freaking day.
That's what it is, man.
Yeah.
They invest all the resources into one kid.
But I think, Hagwon owners just catered to it. You know, people started calling after hours, and Hagwon owners kind of, you know,
if you don't, he will.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then that gets around town, and they have a personal life, so you can't call them. Yeah, isn't that okay? Yeah.
And they come to work on Monday smiling, not overstressed. Oh, it's not easy, man.
Yeah, it's not easy. And so our brand, you know, Hagwon Okdong is very test focused. Like most Hagwons run on tests, right? You, a lot of kids do the Sunung. They study for that, and it's mainly
TOEFL, all that.
Yeah, mainly middle school and older. And our program is very heavily communication based, so we don't prepare kids for tests, like Sunung and TOEFL and all that stuff. I do it personally if things come up, I've done it, but our program itself is not. So Okdong is not actually the best, not the best place for our program to be.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, what is it, Warwick or the other ones, SLP, which is SLP is a nightmare. The kids that I've received, that I talked to from SLP, man, they've got freaking tics, they've got problems, they're stressed out. Like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. I've had kids just doing this kind of shit from SLP. And the stories I heard from kids themselves, I'm like, so how do, out of curiosity, I was asking one girl, I'm like, how do classes work at SLP? She says, kids only speak English. I'm like, how do... Because I used to teach kindergarten classes.
Hey, come on. Like, yeah. Wow. The sign on the door says that.
But so this is from the mouth of a, you know, 8-year-old girl or 7-year-old girl. Like, how is it possible that all children speak English only? She says, yes, they do. I said, what do teachers do? I said, do they make you cry? Yes, they make us cry. If you speak Korean, what happens? They send us out of the classroom to the director's office. I said, do the directors make you cry? Yeah, they make you cry.
It was like during the Japanese occupation. Yeah, when you start speaking Korean, they'll beat you.
And so these are larger classrooms. You've got classrooms of like 20 plus kids. Our classrooms topped out at 12. I think the most kids I had in the classroom was 11. And to keep 11 kids from speaking Korean, you know, they're all 7 or 6 year old. How is it even possible? There's me and another Korean teacher, and it's impossible to have 100% English all the time.
You got those shockers on. Yeah. That's a Chinese style or something, isn't it?
So I don't know. I think we had a very good program running at the castle.
At the castle,
because we had it outdoors, you know, so we were able to take the teach English in the classroom and provide them with the foundations, and then take that out into the garden and teach them, actually get them to use the language that we taught in the classroom.
Beautiful, you know?
Yeah, so we could dig up the plants, and if I taught them about rain, then we could go outside and talk about puddles and all that stuff. If I taught them about sunshine, we could go outside and talk about how plants grow and use that language we learned about planting and digging up and seeds and all that stuff.
What was that big structure you had in the yard there?
Oh, that was a library.
Oh, no way.
It was like an outdoor library. It's gone now.
But what a cool little...
Yeah, but that place is cursed. So the owner, basically before us shut down, there is a rumor that some kid died.
That was Kyungi.
Yeah. And so the rumor is that a child died in the school.
A Kyungi Yuchiwon kid?
Apparently, yeah. I don't know if it's true or not, but this is what I heard from another Hagwon kindergarten
director. After you signed the lease?
No, after we left. Actually, we ran into... she was a former student of mine, and she also had a kindergarten. She's retired now after many years, but she... Literally, my wife and I were walking, and we bumped into her, and, you know, my wife and her started talking. My wife told her, oh, we left. And she like grabbed her hands. She's like, I'm so glad you left. That place is cursed. And she starts going on and on about things that happened. My wife's like, why didn't you tell me these things before we moved on?
Her eyes roll back and turn white.
Yeah, literally. You know, Koreans tend to be superstitious, right? There's a lot of belief of ghosts and stuff like that. So And this school apparently is built on former burial grounds.
Oh, no way.
Apparently, the owner, there was some tombs there. Those were removed, and the castle was built. And so it's considered to be cursed.
I'm surprised it hasn't been redeveloped into condos or something. Yeah. It's a nice place.
And dude, right tucked in the back, too. No one could build behind you.
It's a beautiful place. Yeah. But yeah, like after the 4 years or 3 years we were there, I guess, and all this stuff that happened to us and the shit that my wife went through, I'm like, dude, there may be some truth to this whole curse thing. Because
no doubt.
It's not...
The superstitions here are crazy to me, man. Like, just even, like, for some of my old directors, if they're having problems, like, students quit, they're like, oh, what should I do? Should I think about my business? No, I'm going to the Jumjangi, the fortune teller.
Fortune tellers, yeah.
They go pay hundreds of dollars to ask some random person in a different city about the status of their hagwon in... Like, I don't know. It's wild to me. But
my wife implemented this policy of no used furniture in our house. I'm like, why? It's bad luck.
My in-laws tried to do that too.
It's bad luck. So I wanted to get a desk for my daughter, right? She needed a desk for whatever. And I found this nice big corner desk for $20. She's like, no, you're not bringing that home. I'm like, why not? It's a nice desk.
It goes, it's changing. It's used. The carrot market there is changing that. But for a long time. Mm. I mean, going to Canada, we didn't have any real winter stuff.
Mm.
And I got the kids, Gina got Sorel boots for $6. And I was like, I don't care how used they are. $6 for a pair of Sorels going to Winnipeg. I'm investing.
As a single guy, dude, We comb the streets of Mugadong for all
free
of our
sofas every weekend. You get a sofa upgrade every weekend.
Right, exactly.
Okay, we'll leave Tombstone at 3 a.m. and then there's two sofas to pick up and then throw ours out to the park.
Do you remember, dude, I remember illegally dumping a sofa at his house one day. We're like, oh man, this is bad. We should really call someone. Put it down. went to bring the other one in. As we were bringing it in, some other girls were taking it. Like, yeah.
That's the best one.
Even on the karma.
You can't do that anymore either, right?
You got to put stickers and stuff on it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, even if you there's something on the side of the street, man, don't pick it up.
Oh, no.
Don't get anything. Because somebody will come chase you down and say, this is mine, and you stole it.
Oh, really?
Right now,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, jeez Louise.
That's my advice to anybody listening.
Yeah.
Don't pick up anything that's out on the street. If you see an old TV, just don't leave it.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Literally, you will receive a phone call or there will be a knock on your door and there'll be police saying, like, you have a TV that you took off the street that belongs to somebody and they're claiming that it's
plus interest.
Yeah.
TV interest.
You got to see the...
And you'll have to go back and grovel to them and pay, return the item and pay them, you know, some blood money, just so you don't get a criminal record.
You got
to
see the amount of furniture, dude, that's thrown out in my complex. And there's several pickup places around. I mean, this is just in front of like three buildings.
Mm-hmm.
There is full living room sets.
Yeah.
All like... everything you could possibly imagine. Every Monday they come and take away.
I think this came about with the inflation and everything. Just people are a lot more money oriented than they used to.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the birth of Carrot. I mean, at home you have so many options. Here there was none until that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Shane there. How did you choose that? And you're the franchise rights for Korea, right?
Yeah.
So what is it like? You must talk to other guys or guys on expat dads or whatever that own theirs and they have other support maybe if they have a franchise or something. What is it like being the king of the franchise there? Your support came from Europe, right?
Yeah, but the head school is located in Taiwan.
Okay.
Yeah. Shane, the owner, he's still alive. He's an older dude now. But basically... in 2016, we were kind of on the verge of moving back home or staying in Korea. I was getting tired of like running all around the city and teaching privates and all that stuff. And I said to my wife, if we're going to stay, and back then I was worried about air pollution. Right now, I don't give a shit. But back then I was like, oh my God.
Forgot about that.
Mask.
Wow. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Holy shit. In 2016, 17,
what?
Like pre-COVID.
Worse than now?
It's not bad now.
Yeah. I don't know.
But that's what it was. I thought it's not bad now.
Yeah.
Didn't it?
I mean, maybe not this week or something, but I think in general, year on year, I think it's always been bad.
Yeah, anyways.
It was always, maybe COVID desensitized me. You know, a year, 2 years of masks. I was like, forget that. Air pollution?
Been smelling my own breath for fucking 4 years now.
So in 2016, I said, we're either staying, but if we're staying, we're going to do something. We're going to run a business or start a hog one. I'm not doing this running around because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so my wife said, you know, how about we start our own hog one using materials from stores? And she says, well, if we do it, why don't we do it the proper way and just get a franchise? Because it's easier. You get, you know, you get the program. Yeah. You don't have to work.
Ready, set, go.
Yeah. So I went online, started looking for it and started looking for franchises. And I found Shane. I lived in Japan for a year. I was teaching there.
Sorry, let me interrupt for a second. I mean, usually if you're going to start a hagwon, I would assume that would be the wife's role to... I mean, 99% of hagwons are Korean hagwons, Korean-owned.
Yeah.
How did you come to the consensus that you should start looking for hagwons? Because franchises. Most of them probably wouldn't have any information in English anyways.
Yeah.
If you're looking at Wharton or whatever they are, I mean...
Well, we weren't looking for a Korean franchise.
So you're looking for something... Okay.
Yeah. We wanted to, like, my wife.
Something different.
Yeah, my wife was very specific. She's like, find something that's not Korean. And I agreed.
Cool.
You know, I don't want to be teaching the same old thing everybody else. And, you know, the programs in Korea are, they're all the same, essentially. So I found Shane. I was like, okay, I used to teach in Japan. I know the brand, it's all over the place. I said, how about this? And I usually root for the underdog. I like the underdog. I'm like, okay, it's not in Korea. It's brand new. I'm like, you know, this could be our shot. Like, we could build something.
And you knew it was already popular in Japan?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It was. There's over 300 schools in Japan.
Wow.
Shane. Holy shit.
But Shane, the owner, he sold that to another company. So it's owned by another company, but it's still under the Shane name.
Right.
Anyway, we decided to go with Shane. We got the program. We got it and just launched right like that. It's run, my wife runs it, right? Obviously, because it's a lot easier to set it up as a Korean here. I know that some foreigners did it on their own. They established their own brands. And like, I think there is a girl that I remember. She set up her own Hagwon. She did all the footwork. She went to the offices. Her Korean is, yeah, I guess, but it must be a lot better than mine because dealing with office works, work in Korean, like it's a nightmare. So if you don't speak the language, good luck. So it's obviously easier to do for a Korean native.
Sure.
Take care of the paperwork.
So when you approach them, is that we want to open a franchise or I want to have the sole rights for Korea to sell franchises?
Well, there was no other way.
That was it. Okay.
Because there is no school, so they.
But you don't. I mean, he's not charging you more to be have the franchise rights for Korea, or is that just assumed you have to pay that because you're the first one?
Well, we had a contract. We have a contract with them and their fees, but we don't. We had to pay for the master franchise in Korea.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you said I don't want those, I just want mine. If somebody else wants to open one in Seoul, let them open it. I want nothing to do with it. You can't do that. As the initial school here, you have to kind of oversee any other ones that open?
Yeah, that was the agreement, yeah. Yeah, so right now there's another school in Busan that opened up last year. There's another Shane. So that's our under our umbrella.
That's awesome.
But the contract that we set up was, okay, you're going to be in charge of Korea. Whatever happens there, you know, you're in charge of that.
So do you have to train the guys in Busan?
Yeah.
Your place or...
Yeah, so like teacher training, I provide the teacher training and the management training partially. My wife does a lot of that as well for you know for the managers, obviously.
And is there any incentive for opening up franchises or no?
Well, it's the same as another franchise, right? Like
you get a percentage of whatever if you're the master franchisor.
Oh, for me, you mean?
Or yeah, No, I mean, is it worth you spending a lot of time working on your school and making it better or trying to create other franchises because that's more lucrative?
It's both. I mean, if your school is good as a master franchisor, if you're doing well, then obviously, you know, you're growing your reputation. One of the reasons why, like, other franchises can open up Shane is because we've already established ourselves here. We have a reputation, so to speak. Like, people, when my wife talks to other Hagwon owners, you know, they know. People know about Shane and stuff. So it's easier to open up a school because of their reputation.
Right.
Sure. What were the elements of that, of Shane, that really sealed the deal for you? Was there any... You enjoyed the books?
It's focused on speaking. The way you learn language is through speaking. You know, Korea kind of does it backwards. They focus on the writing and reading. And that's why you've got a lot of kids who are really good at grammar, but they can't communicate. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. So like that's backwards. When you look at the way... children, babies learn languages. They don't learn grammar. They don't learn reading. They learn how to speak first. And that's how you learn languages, right?
Absolutely.
I always compared like Thailand, the people in Thailand on the islands, right, who speak English. Mm. I bet a small percentage of them probably know the grammar or know how to write it. But they're pretty good at communicating because they spend a lot of time talking to tourists.
They're fantastic.
Right? Yeah. And in Korea, you've got the other way around. Like you've got kids who can explain grammar to you.
Yeah.
But they can't communicate.
I read Harry Potter in grade one in a second language.
Yeah.
How's the weather?
Exactly. So,
as opposed to, hello, mister. Good price for you. Big man, big size, big man. but that's it. They're fun. I don't care how good their grammar, their vocabulary, anything is. They're fun to talk to.
Yeah.
And then they got a sense of humor and they understand nuance a little bit. And it's just the ultimate mode of communication.
A lot of it is cultural based as well. But, you know, generally kids in Korea study differently than they would in other countries, right?
I always, when I get a new student, I always tell them, like, whether it's an adult or a child, like, hey, do you speak English? What's everyone's answer? No, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
People
do it all the time.
I was only in Toronto for seven years.
Ban Ki-moon used to start as, like, yeah, but that's the culture of being humble and not pumping your own tires.
Yeah.
I mean, I say, hey, I don't care if you think you're not good or whatever. Just don't tell me that. Just don't say anything.
That was the point I wanted to make. Like, yeah, don't drill that.
Don't
back
say
into
yes.
Your head
don't say no. Just say, I don't know.
But working on it. People feel the need to justify their lack of perfectness. The gym I go to, there's a bunch of young guys, and like there's a couple of trainers. they're in the 30s, I guess, and one of the guys that just comes in there regularly as well. And yeah, both of them, like, you know, one of the trainers, 31, I think, and I started talking to him, and his English is not perfect, but it's good enough to communicate. He's like, oh, sorry, my English is not great. I'm like, dude, we're having conversations every single day.
I love that when they say it after 20 minutes, you're like,
yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
And the other guy, the customer, same thing. You know, I can tell that his English is even better than the trainer's, and we're having a, you know, conversation. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, my English is not good. Yeah. You know what? You could have warned me 20 minutes ago before I got into this thing. I would have just avoided this whole thing altogether.
He's like, oh. How's the gym culture? How do you find gym culture here?
This is the first gym I went to. It's good. It's... I've got nothing to compare it to because, like I said, it's the first one. Yeah, it's pretty relaxed. The guys are pretty friendly. I started talking to them, and it's, I don't know. I haven't been to a gym in a really long time. You know, for me, it was always work, home. In my house right now, it's across the street. I live in Okdong.
Oh, okay.
My Hagwon is in Okdong. It takes me 2 minutes, literally,
beautiful
across the street. Yeah. Well, beautiful, yes, but I'm so...
Isolated, too.
Isolated. Okay. No time for any. So I go to work... then I go to the gym, then I go home, I spend a couple of hours with my kids, have dinner, and I crash. Because I wake up at 5 a.m. every morning, right?
Well, what are you doing at 5?
I do the crypto channel. I record videos every day. Because I started the crypto channel, right? So I've got that Road Free Life channel that I was doing, and it wasn't doing very well. Because of the difficulty of the niche.
I checked your subscribers out. You're over 1,000.
On?
Road Free.
Yeah. 1,400.
Does that qualify you for?
No. So I was doing that channel for like 5 years.
Not enough hours? Not enough watch hours?
What did it used to be called? Living in Korea?
Yeah. Yeah, and I changed it because of the algorithmic preference YouTube poses on. Whatever. So every time I'd go online and try to look up Living Korea, you get like millions of other channels with titles of that.
Especially in the last probably 5-10 years with all the K-pop.
Absolutely.
And guys. You've got like young kids in their 20s or 30s, single, with time on their hands to just browse around and shoot videos every 5 minutes.
Right,
me, in my 40s with a family. I'm like, dude, I do it on the weekend. I'll post one video. Good luck.
So you're up at 5, you're doing Crypto Father?
Yeah, the Crypto Father. So I started, initially when I started Road Free Life, this was in 2017, and I started a YouTube channel with the goal of creating crypto content.
Okay.
And I called it Crypto Father.
Okay.
And then, for, you know, reasons, crypto-related reasons, I switched. I stopped making crypto content. I was like, you know what, I want to start recording videos of my family. So I switched it. Switched the channel name and I started uploading videos about stuff in Korea. I'm like, why not do that?
It's interesting.
Yeah. So I was doing that for a long time and I still enjoyed it, but I just stopped right now because I don't have time, basically. So it's not really... The channel's on hold.
You enjoy the editing, I think, the
most. I totally did, yeah. And shooting the videos, too. Like, it's fun.
What are you using in terms of equipment to shoot and software to edit?
So initially I was using my phone, then I got an Osmo Action first.
Okay.
That thing crapped out on me, water leakage. And then I got Osmo 2, very cool device. It's like a tiny little thing, two pieces. It's held on a magnet.
Okay.
And then you got a battery part, and then there is the lens camera part, which also has an internal battery. And you can connect it for longer battery usage, or you can disconnect it and just use the small one. But after I think two years maybe, the battery and the camera crapped out on me. So right now I have nothing.
Okay. You're just using the phone?
Yeah. I haven't been shooting anything outside. I just, when I do the crypto channel, I just, you know, it's
in at the desk.
At the desk. What do you use to edit?
DaVinci Resolve.
DaVinci Resolve?
Yeah. It's a really good program. You can.
I do what the fuck? What do I use here? Filmora?
Yeah. I think it's not Filmora. Online. It's a
Wondershare Filmora.
Online, right?
Filmora? No. It's a
program you download.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I paid $70 or something for it, and it's good for you. You can keep paying and get updates.
Yeah. But
for what I do, that's more than enough.
Yeah, the DaVinci one apparently has got like it's a Hollywood grade program.
Oh,
there's a lot you can do with it. But obviously, I don't. I use a small portion of it.
Sure.
It's very basic what I do. But it's a good program, and I started using it. And you know, there's a learning curve to every single editing software. Right? And I started using DaVinci Resolve, and every time I try to use something else, I'm like, oh man, I got to relearn it. And forget it. I'll just stick to DaVinci
Resolve. That's what I had to do with Filmora too. Yeah. I used to use something called, I can remember the old one. I'm not going to check, but I use another one, and it's switching over. Just, oh man, yeah.
It just takes too long.
It was a couple of weeks anyways, because you're so used to it, yeah. it's burned in your brain how to do this or that. But oh, that's awesome, man.
So where's the Crypto Father channel at?
What's that?
The Crypto Father.
2,000.
No, but what
subs?
How often are you putting videos up? And
every day, except for the weekends. So Monday to Friday, basically, except for Saturday, Sunday. I sometimes upload. But,
and what is? Tell us a little bit of the focus and. So what are you covering?
So I started just, you know, trying with news on just general crypto news. More recently, I got into mining, started mining a little bit. So I'm trying to do a little bit of that. And then just uploading videos on projects. I tried to, there's a difference between, like in crypto, there are two different kinds, I guess. There's proof of stake and proof of work. Proof of work is this stuff like Bitcoin. You need equipment and hardware to mine, you invest some energy into producing the cryptocurrencies. Proof of stake is stuff, basically it's based on code, and anybody could just drum up a code and launch a project on proof of stake, like Ethereum.
I was just reading one on who went to full El Salvador or Honduras.
Oh yeah,
who went to they did 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but now that it's shooting up, they're like, El Salvador went from a third world country to the second richest country in South America or something.
Yeah. All the people that changed their national.
El Salvador changed, it was getting crazy. They just said, our national currency is now Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And now with this recent rise, it was on their national whatever savings for the whole country. And with the recent spike, it's just... They went from the poorest country 2 years ago to like the richest country in South or Central America now. And
that's funny.
It's a wow.
And I think the president announced that they're going to continue buying Bitcoin every single day. I don't know how much of it, but they're planning to buy Bitcoin every single day for the foreseeable future.
Oh, that's wild. My favorite, one of the coolest things I thought about or that I learned about Bitcoin is when people are mining, like you said, it takes energy to do, right? So some of the biggest miners, I think, didn't they go to, was it like Iceland or Greenland or something? And they found like the perfect climate to keep their computers cool with, and they had to match that with like the cost of power in that place. Oh, it's really just higher level thinking.
You have to invest a lot of money into Bitcoin mining, mainly because of the cost of electricity. Like costs of electricity in Korea are pretty stupid.
It's expensive here?
Yeah, you're paying, I think, for the basic utilities, it's like 20 cents.
Per kilowatt hour?
Per kilowatt. And then it ups up after a certain amount, so it could go up
to
29, depending on how much you consume.
Yeah.
So
if you go over the limit, you start getting jacked. Yeah.
And then you've got, in Canada, you've got, I think in Quebec, it's 7 cents. Which is a huge difference. And then if you want to expand, if you want to do something bigger, there is another way of doing it where you could get, I think, 5 cents or less per kilowatt hour.
Oh, wow.
Wow. You know, mining in Korea.
Not a good idea.
Not the best.
So what are we looking at? What's the future of cryptos? I love watching all the fake or the hype or the which coin's going up, which is going down, which is going to be the next.
There's a lot of, you know, it's the same as everything else. All these YouTubers, you know, they love the hype, and obviously they get paid from advertisements, and they get paid for by YouTube, but also, you know, pushing content out from companies. But
how long until a bunch of leading countries are using cryptos as a regular currency?
Are you friends
currency?
With Chris Mazeroff?
No, I know.
You know who?
Yeah.
Well, he would have been here around the same time as you, I think. And he posted something, I think we talked about it, where he said, don't be surprised this year, 2024, when a major country comes out, not just El Salvador or whatever, but a major country comes out and says, we own half a Bitcoin or whatever.
Yeah.
Wild.
Well, didn't they? I mean, it'll be BlackRock or what? They already own half the world. I mean, it's not.
BlackRock is already.
Yeah, I just saw something about that.
Neck deep in crypto. Yeah, yeah.
These guys aren't. I mean, I don't think this is a surprise.
No. The reason why Bitcoin is pumping right now, why crypto is going up, is because of BlackRock. Because they launched ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs,
right.
Exchange traded funds, which means that Bitcoin essentially can be invested in by the regular Joe,
everyone without buying it,
in the stock Wall Street, market. Yeah, in the stock market. And wow. So that's because of them. SEC caved in, and
but I thought when I was looking into that, they said, "Hey, these guys known this for years already. They've been buying Bitcoin before. They're not going to buy it after it gets approved. I mean, they've already bought it all."
Yeah. They're using it to buy.
So to buy the one guy, stuff. Michael Saylor, right? He was the proponent of Bitcoin for I don't know how many years, and he was.
I've seen his videos.
His conviction. Him. He's like, you know, he's a firm believer that Bitcoin will become the world's currency eventually, and he just keeps buying. His company MicroStrategy exploded. I don't know, went up by like 2,000% in value over the past 2 years because of Bitcoin. BlackRock came in a couple of months ago. So Michael Saylor owns something like 200 something thousand Bitcoin, right? Worth, I don't know how many billions of dollars that is. And he's been collecting that over 2 or 3 years now, or 4 years. Mm. BlackRock came in, and within a month or two, they surpassed his overall value.
That's insane. So.
How many Bitcoins are there?
21 million max.
So how can the world run? I mean, it's too finite to support.
Well, that's where value comes in. That's the whole idea.
But that's what I mean. But to run the whole, but you, it's half not, the world to run more than a few countries.
But you can sell fractions of a Bitcoin.
Yeah. You have like 18 decimal places behind it.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to, you know, if you, the value of Bitcoin, let's say, is $70,000, then the fractions of it will be worth cents. So I guess the idea would be to have Bitcoin as a currency. And then, you know, if you go and buy coffee, then you would be paying like a fraction of it. Problem is that it takes like 10 minutes to transact.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Like the whole idea of the blockchain, right? It needs to be verified on the blockchain by different computers. So when you submit a block, a transaction on the block, that transaction needs to be verified. And it takes, on Bitcoin, it takes 10 minutes to verify that transaction.
Isn't that the benefit of using Ethereum? Isn't that a lot quicker?
It is a lot quicker, but you pay like $18 for transactions right now on Ethereum. And it used to be stupider. So it used to, like, people, I think the most expensive transaction on Ethereum was like $100. I mean, if you go buy a coffee and you have to pay $18 in transactions, it makes no sense. So that's why there's like a lot of these other cryptocurrencies that are coming out with improvements to make, you know, things a lot more scalable, faster and cheaper transactions. So.
What about in terms of governments creating their own coins,
CBDCs.
I mean, which government doesn't like to have full power and control?
Well, every government does.
But that's what I mean. So why would it be in any government's interest to let instead Bitcoin of doing become a standard
instead of doing gold?
It isn't in their interest. That's why such a strong push against it. Yeah.
So the question: what are your views, or what do you think the future of it is?
Well, their government's already purchasing Bitcoin because it's inevitable. Like, you know, the value of money is diminishing. The reason why everything's going up in price because there's more and more money in circulation. Just keep printing that stuff up. The reason why Bitcoin is valuable is because it's 21 million. It can never be reproduced. It can never be...
Have they all been mined?
No.
People are still
How many? Still digging? That's a good question. How many are left?
I think there's like 3 or 4 million left. That's it. And 2 million have gone missing in action for whatever reason. You know, you've got like wallets that have been locked up. Bitcoin has been locked up in them.
We talked about it last time. Yeah.
People lost their keys. So
there's
the amount of, like, right now, cryptocurrency, it's a wild west. There's like constant hacks. Somebody's been hacked. Just the other day, what was it? Some project on Ethereum has been hacked for $4.6 million. I'm like, geez.
That's the other part. We were talking last time about the guy who lost his password. He's only got two more chances.
Yeah.
And he's got a contract with this hacking company, but this hacking company says we can get it. 100% we can get it.
Yeah.
But he wants to use the time he's got left with his hacking company or whatever to figure it out. But if those guys can do it, if the other guys say we can do it and they can do it, then I mean, it jeopardizes the stability of the coin, no?
I always regretted not buying it in what, 2013 or 2011 or something when we... No, it was earlier than that.
You were aware of Bitcoin in 2011?
You know Rabbi. That's...
Yeah.
Dude, we sat down one day and talked about... me, him, and John were like, oh, should we do... Dude, it was around the time the guy bought the pizza. It was the
craziest thing going.
Like, if you would have put $50 into it, you'd be a billionaire.
Dude, I didn't hear about Bitcoin until 2016.
Oh, okay.
when I started Chain, right? The international franchising director, he basically said, oh, have you heard of Bitcoin? I'm like, what the heck is Bitcoin? 2016. It's like, oh, well, I invested in Bitcoin, I got half a Bitcoin, and now 2 months later, I've got a full Bitcoin. I'm like, what is Bitcoin?
Yeah.
So I started looking up on the internet what the heck that was, and I found that Corbit was the first exchange in Korea.
Yeah.
And I told my wife, well, look, Bitcoin is like, I think it was $600. I'm like, I heard about Bitcoin, this is what it is. My wife's like, go invest into it, just buy one.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. But I didn't know how to get into it.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to, you know, the whole investment thing was brand new to me.
And keeping it safe and...
Not forgetting your password.
Yeah.
That's another whole...
I can't remember the ones I use every day.
So this was like February of 2016. February of 2017. Bitcoin was about $600. I didn't buy it.
Yeah.
And 2 months later, I look at it. I was like, oh, $1,000 for Bitcoin. I'm like, shit, why didn't I buy it? But still, I didn't buy it.
Yeah.
A couple of months later, it's $4,000. I'm like, God damn.
Shit,
man. By the end of, you know, so I started investing. I figured out how to do it. And by the end of 2017, you know, Bitcoin is like $17,000.
Yeah.
I'm taking it all to the bank because I bought some. But then, of course, there is a crash and it all just goes
boom. Yeah.
And it happened so fast. So from 2017 to 2020, I was in recovery mode, man, because I invested some money and... lost it all. Well, not lost it. I mean, the value of the tokens went to...
Absolutely.
To the gutter.
That's got to be hard looking at the wallet after that.
Yeah. So in 2020, a friend of mine messages me. He's like, Jack, when is a good time to buy Bitcoin? And this was like the first time I started looking at it again after 3 years.
And you're like, oh, it's $6,000?
No, it was $4,000. I'm like, dude, if there's any other time to buy Bitcoin, you know, then it's right now. Because it was 17,000. Right now it's like 4.3 or something.
March 2020.
And then, yeah, 2020 comes 21 and, you know, you see Bitcoin going to 69K. I'm like,
yeah.
It was, I think it was making noise there, maybe when it went to 1,000 or something, and it was just a kind of gimmick before that. And I was sitting in Santa Lucia on Portage. We were eating pizza, and our server was this Russian dude. and we were talking about it, and he goes, I can't do an accent, but he goes, you guys know Bitcoin? I said, well, not really. Like, we just, my dad and my cousin, we just read about it. So we're just talking. We're like, you want it? You need Bitcoin? We're like, what the hell is this? And he was like 20 years old and he had already had like however many Bitcoins. And that was when they first came out with like Bitcoin ATMs or something. When was that?
Yes. Yeah.
Around then. And that Santa Lucia had a machine. Maybe that's why we were talking, because we went in and we're like, they got a fucking Bitcoin ATM at Santa Lucia? Come on. And we were talking. And so we were asking the guy. And he's like, yeah, some people use it, some don't. But yeah, I remember. And he's like, buy the Bitcoin.
But if there's any, I mean, how I sleep at night knowing that you had a chance to buy it at $1 or $2, like, you could have, I would rather not have ever owned it than have bought a ton of it and someone hacked me or forgot a password. Can you imagine, dude? You got $1 billion, like, oh, if I could just remember that goddamn password from 2012. Until then, I'm going to keep going to work.
But because when that guy had it, it wasn't worth anything, so he didn't really care.
Right.
But now it's worth a bloody fortune. Now he's like, every day, I just want to get the password.
Well, the pizza guy spent like 10,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah. Right? He got two pizzas.
Jesus.
$2 billion pizzas.
So many cases like that. I think I saw another guy somewhere. He had 1,000 Bitcoin, and I think he sold it for like $30 a head or wherever.
Yeah. But again, hindsight's 2020. You can't beat yourself up for that.
So where do you hope to bring the Crypto Father channel going forward? Is that kind of like a hobby thing or just a passion project?
I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I mean, you know, it would be nice if it grew into something profitable and big enough for me to call it a full-time job. But
what do you need to make it profitable?
1,000 subscribers. Yeah, and, that's 1,000 it. Watch
subscribers,
hours.
Basically. Yeah. I've got. Well, I mean, I'm in the program, so I'm like
part of the program.
Yeah. I think I cashed in like $111 for the past month.
It's better than a kick in the ass. Yeah.
So basically, I started the channel maybe a year and a half ago, just for fun, because I wanted to do crypto a long time ago.
Yeah.
But then I started doing Road Free Live, and then I decided, hey, you know, I liked to do crypto. I wanted to start doing.
It's part of the content. Journey.
I'm like,
part
okay, I'm gonna start a channel. So I started a channel, and I uploaded some videos, but I wasn't really wholeheartedly into it, and I just left it. And at some point, I noticed I'm not uploading anything, literally. But, you know, the channel continued to grow subscriber-wise. Mm. I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, maybe, like, it's growing now. What would happen if I actually invested some time into it? Right. So I decided I'm going to wake up every morning at 5, because I have no other time to do it, and just start uploading on a regular basis. And, yeah, within, like, 6 months, I was monetized.
Beautiful.
And right now it's, like, 2,920 subscribers, something like that.
Man, that's awesome. And in your statistics or whatever, it'll give you a breakdown, I think, of shorts versus videos.
Mm.
Where are you getting paid from? Is it shorts and videos?
No, it's videos mainly.
Videos
shorts, for sure. Like, they've got different categories for videos and shorts. For videos, you need to have
4,000 view hours.
Yeah,
yeah.
For smaller channels, they've got there are three different categories. Smaller channels, you need 1,000 subscribers,
yeah,
3,000 watch hours.
Oh, fuck.
And then there's another step. You need to have 4,000 watch hours.
Yeah.
I don't remember how it works. But for shorts, you need to have 10 million views.
In the last 90 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10 million?
Yeah.
So it's 4,000 watch hours in a year.
Yeah.
And you need 1,000 subscribers, but yeah, in the last 90 days.
Calendar year or just 12 months?
That's to get paid on any shorts, or like if you're monetized for...
I think on any shorts, yeah.
If you're monetized for... I wonder if you can get money.
Honestly, I don't know. I didn't check my shorts because my shorts get... I don't upload too many, and the shorts get very few views.
Like okay. 50
What's the demographic of your subscribers?
mainly Nigeria. I think the second country. Sorry?
Really? Princes?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And I think it's because some of the videos that I uploaded recently, the project that I made videos on, the biggest demographic was located in Nigeria. And I think that's what pushed my channel up to get monetized.
Good.
And so the second one is, I think, the USA. There's United Kingdom, India, Canada, yeah.
India's
but like the highest one is like Nigeria, I think the States, India, the Philippines. And
do you do anything to push it out there, or do you synergize that with Instagram or anything?
No, or I don't use Instagram at all. I put it up on X.
Yeah.
Twitter, former Twitter,
yeah.
And Facebook. That's it. I don't have time to muck around, man. I wish I did. I don't have time to
drive more views.
Dude, that's awesome. I would love to make $1 from YouTube.
Yeah.
I think once even you get that first check, you're like, oh, that's, you know, you can see.
How many watch hours do you
have? I'll check right now. I think 1,600. I haven't uploaded anything in a while, but it's weird, man. I can't, hold on.
But even 3,000 hours is a lot.
1,655.
You have to be consistent. And like on my Living Korea channel, or the Road Free Life channel, I think I got up to about, 1,600 hours.
Mm.
And it's just declined. Right now, I think I'm at like 500.
And it resets after a year?
Yeah. So
it doesn't reset.
No, no,
it's,
yeah.
It's 12, a constant year.
12-hour.
So here's a funny one.
Yeah.
I was up... maybe 2,500, like I'd say last two Decembers ago, had a massive, massive influx of watches. Like, whoa.
Nigeria?
This is amazing. I think it was India, to be honest. India and the States are the big ones.
Mm.
But after that, you know, you're cruising through the year, like, oh, I'm going to hit 3,000, or mine's 4,000 watch hours.
Mm.
And then after that week in December, it just goes, boom. I was like, oh, shit, I forgot about that. It wasn't consistent, you know. It was just a huge thing. And that wipes you out. But man, it's got to be consistent, man.
You do.
You got to be consistent.
And that's why I started doing it every day. Because I'm like, you know, the algorithm picks up on how many people watch, right? So if you push out content, the more you push out, the more content you create. Obviously, the more hours,
the more casts you're putting out.
Yeah, sure.
And the better chance of someone going next, and watching four in a row, five.
Just
a
what is it? The law of statistics, I guess, probabilities.
I like to watching maybe popular YouTubers now. One that comes to my mind is do you know CoffeeZilla?
Yeah,
dude. When you look at his stuff now, you're like, wow, this is a very well refined channel, and he's got like cool backgrounds or whatever he does on his green screen. But then you go back, even like a year or two ago, his videos are shit.
Yeah.
His videos are shit. Like, they're not total garbage, but I mean, I like watching the progression of a channel. And even with Crypto Father, it's very broad right now, but you might make one video and be like, okay, I got to go in this direction.
Yeah.
And then you branch off from there. But, yeah. Oh, that's cool, man. Congrats. How are you going to spend the $100? Buy some roses for the wife?
No, I might use it in advertisement.
Yeah?
Yeah, I might put it into just promoting some of the videos, probably reinvest.
How are you going to...
Because it runs through Google AdSense.
Okay.
I don't know how the payment comes. I have no idea. It's so weird, man.
I got $40 in AdSense, and I don't know how to get it from the old website there.
Yeah,
I have no idea how
the payment's going to be processed. Because Google, when you get monetized, this is the weirdest thing. Like, you get a message saying, okay, you have to type in your address, your billing address, and all that stuff. And then... it's like, oh, you're going to get a password, and then you have to use that password, like a digit number.
They sent it to my house. They sent me a code.
Who sends mail?
Yeah, yeah.
They send you a piece of mail. Or a text or something.
No.
So I started, you get three trials. I messed it up. I'm like, those are not the numbers. And I read it again. It's like, oh, no, it's in mail. Who sends mail? Google actually sent me a code in mail, and I had to enter that. So I messaged them again, and I said, this is what happened. And I got to say, they're very good responding.
Yeah.
They, Saturday, Sunday, within 24 hours, they get back to you.
Very nice.
And get it sorted out. Reset it, and I was able to
start it up. Sweet.
So what are you, looking ahead, what are you, anything 5-10 years down the road, do you plan on staying here? Moving back home?
Jesus.
Cashing that crypto,
winter peg?
5-10 years. Job interview back home in university. Where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? Man, I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow or next year.
Yeah.
No, I would like to move back home, but...
What's the draw? What's the draw for you back home?
I think kids, mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, that coming up middle school, I think starting middle school, starting high school is probably two times where a lot of people make the decision to make the jump.
And I would like to.
But you got a successful business going and stuff. I mean,
I don't know if we'll call it successful. It's, we're surviving. We're surviving right now, but I wouldn't call it successful.
I mean, there's a lot of businesses in Korea that don't make it past 6 months or a year.
True.
You guys have been around quite a while. I mean, I think anything that can stay open past 2-3 years in Korea is... of success, because man, lots don't. Pisik Mikchu there,
Mikado and thing. Switched over. I don't think he was making money on Mikado, right?
Right. And he was making it at the beer shop. Yeah. Now he just opened the biggest beer shop in Oakdale. But even those, I mean, he had the best patio in the southern part of the city. Still gone.
That's true.
What's the drawback? Is it culture? Is it the freedom for kids? Is it
the snow?
The snow,
the winters.
Actually, I didn't mind the winter, man. When I was there, I was enjoying the winter, probably because I was away from it for so long. But I was walking around in the winter's wonderland, and it was so nice to be back in the cold. And it's not cold. It's not, you know, because it's a very dry climate, right, in the center of Canada. So it's minus 30. But if you bundled up, man, you just feel the frost on your face.
It's the weird.
It's so beautiful. You've got the sunshine, beautiful white snow. It's nice.
That's what's weird about here. It's -3, but you're like,
freezing. Yeah,
just right to your bones. Right to
we just came back, and my kid said, but Canada's way colder, but why is Korea colder? And it was 20 degrees difference, but it felt colder here. Yeah.
And, it's a big country. I miss camping, being away from everybody, just camping in the middle of
Nowhere.
Whoa, what about camping here, dude? You go to a parking lot, you set up a tent.
Have you not been camping
here? Oh, yeah. that was my joke, dude. Last time I went camping.
Yeah, like, you wake up and there's four other tents connected to yours.
Last time I went camping, dude, it was, I swear to God, we drove. Oh, it's a huge recommendation for my brother-in-law. He's like, bro, you got to check this place out. Literally drove 3 hours.
Yeah.
And we camped in a parking lot. In a parking lot. He's like, yeah, look at this place. I'm like, dude, this is just it's a massive parking lot. And there's just, yeah, there. Yeah. It's like big parking spaces. You park your car, set up your tent next to your car. There's a, that's not the camping I imagine. Mm. You haven't located any sweet little.
You know what? A few years ago, we went up to Jolado, and I don't even know where it is. It was a random spot I found by accident. Mm. And it was actually nice, but it was a parking lot, but it was kind of in a valley surrounded by mountains. It was a hot day. There weren't any tents. There was maybe two tents. Mm. So it was off season. And I imagine that during season, it just turns into another little village.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, one tent next to another. Problem was that it was, because it was in a kind of valley surrounded by mountains or hills, whatever, it felt very hot.
Mm.
And I don't think there was a source of water, and so there were no rivers, nothing. It was just like an overgrown parking lot.
Yeah.
It looked nice, but in the summer heat, man, it would be a complete nightmare, especially with like thousands of other tents around you. So, no.
Yeah, I think I would take a Winnipeg winter over a Korean summer. Yeah.
Any day. Mm. I was years ago, I think it was 2011, I had a buddy visit here and we took a motorcycle trip up the East Coast. And on the way back, we were passing through, you know, like driving down some kind of side roads. And there was like the Kegel and all the people and all the tents, you know, scattered around. You could see them clearly from the road. My friend's like, bro, is that a refugee camp? I was like, no, dude, that's summer camping. He was legit like, man, the refugees, are they living out here? I'm like, no, that's like the high-end camping.
Audi, Mercedes, BMW. Yeah. No, that's how we camp. Yeah.
Oh, it's funny.
Do the kids ever mention anything about going home?
No. I mean, home is Korea to them. You know, we traveled. They keep talking about Thailand. We spent a lot of time. We spent more time in Thailand.
Yeah, you put a bunch of videos up on those, yeah.
Yeah, we spent a lot more time in Thailand than back home. Like, the first trip to Canada was last year. We went for a month, me and the kids only.
Oh, cool.
And they liked it, but it was a place they visited.
Not, right, okay.
I think they would get adjusted to Canada quite quickly, because overall, you know, they're not, like, they were born and raised in Korea. They're Korean kids, but they're not Korean kids, you know?
Sure,
yeah. When I look at them, their mentality is different. Their behaviors are different. My daughter is definitely different than most Korean kids. And just her perception.
There's lots of success stories of kids moving from here. They're being born here, raised, and Stacy's kids are doing fine.
Yeah. So, probably. I don't know. But at the same time, I keep hearing stuff about Canada, like stuff you guys started off with.
Yeah, sorry.
Today.
Sorry about that. Didn't want to rain on your parade.
And then, you know, the stuff that Trudeau has done, and then the stuff that I keep hearing on the internet, I'm like, do I really want to go back there?
Hold on. Dude, you hear about the carbon? Same friend told me about carbon tax as well. Everything's right going up 20%.
Another 5% tax on alcohol and stuff like that?
Holy shit.
Like, what?
Yeah.
So it's insane.
You don't know until you lose it, but we take for granted the safety,
right?
The peace, and I mean, we're in Okdong. It's pretty quiet,
exactly.
And it's not. There's not Nore Bongs and everything all over.
Exactly.
So you're in a pretty quiet place, but man, I think it's many people take it for granted. Mom says, "When are you coming home?"
I agree.
I don't think you understand. Like, yeah, that's just the allure of come home, but. Mm. But if you look at the actual facts here, I mean, we're in a pretty lucky spot.
Yeah.
And
that's,
I don't
one
know
of the things what keeps me here as well. For that reason, like, yes, camping's there and family and friends are there and, you know, universities, open space, kids, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, there's the other side of the flip coin with.
And like you say, your kids don't go to Hagwon. For us, I think that's kind of optional. For Koreans, it's not really optional.
Mm.
And if we choose not to send them, then I think we kind of cherry pick the best of Korea and don't worry about the rest. We don't want to go to Hagwons. They don't go to Hagwons.
My buddy keeps telling me it's super expensive in Canada. So if I'm going to go back home and make $20 an hour, sounds good, when I was in university. I'm like, if I was making $20 an hour right. 10 years ago, I'd be freaking flying. But right now, $20 is
you can't survive
making, you know, it's minimum wage.
But, but I think a lot of people, I mean, yes, it costs, it costs more, but man, I watched it. If you eat normal stuff and you don't go spending at restaurants and stuff every day, I think you can still make it work. No problem. My daughter, my sister's got 5 kids.
Wow.
It's not, you can make it work. You go to buy your bulk stuff at Costco, eat lots of eggs, potato, whatever. If you're trying to eat, at restaurants once a week or something, you're going to spend a bloody fortune because McDonald's is $15. So, I mean, if that's your thing, right? Like when we used to go, you know, you whatever, you're making $7, $8, $10 an hour, you go for a $3 set, it wasn't a big deal, but it ain't like that anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So, and everybody's got to have all the toys and all the bells and whistles, and nobody has a starter house anymore.
Mm.
Well, if you went through that, I mean, you don't get your nice house until, you know, the kids are kind of getting older.
Stop jumping on the goddamn couch.
You start with a premium house. That affects how much money you have to spend every other aspect of your life. Sure. So, I don't.
So there's a lot of things to consider. And, you know, we can't just, if it was just me and my wife with a couple of backpacks, we just pick up and go and see what happens.
Sure.
You got kids. There's a business. You can't just...
Goddamn like, wiener kids.
Hey, let's see what happens.
Oh, it's...
Maybe one more I would ask you. When you do the family vids, I like the ones you're in Thailand or Cambodia or wherever, those things. Sure. I think that stuff's cool, and it's cool to get a perspective of, one, someone doing that and being there and whatever. But what is it like for the other members? For the wife and kids, is that... Is it like dad turned that off, or they think like they're actors, or do they say, hey, I want to start doing some of that? Or, I mean, I think it's a cool way to introduce the creative side to kids if your mom or dad's doing it. But what is it like for the rest of the family?
Well, my wife initially was on board with it and then slowly kind of decided that she wasn't cool with it. So I kept her out of the videos.
Yeah.
Same thing for my kids. Initially, when they were younger, they were all over it. You know, it was great. But now my daughter, basically, anytime I pull out, if I try to take a photo with her, you know, a picture of her, she's like,
get out of here.
No, not even, no candid shots at all.
Yeah.
My son's still good. He's a goofball, so he likes to. I was like, man, I'm going to send you to acting school because he's got a knack for it. He likes to goof about. So he's fine with it.
Cool.
My daughter just runs away. My wife's like, strictly, take me off the camera.
Where in Thailand do you go? Are you in the islands?
Yeah, we usually head down to Koh Phangan.
Oh, cool.
First time I went to Koh Phangan was in 2005, I think. And just kind of...
Was a full moon party or that was a honeymoon?
No, this was like before I met my wife. Okay. It was the first time I went. And then just continued going there because, I don't know. Right now it feels like a second home, honestly.
Sure.
We haven't been back in a long time, but it's a pretty small island. And we know it very well. It's comfortable. It's island life. It's relaxed.
The only thing I know about Koh Phangan are drugs, buckets of Sang Song.
Fire and, skipping ropes.
And all those.
Depends where you go.
No, but that's the whole thing, though. Like, I've been there probably 7-8 times, and I've only been to the one spot or two spots. Yeah. But everyone says rest of it's great.
The chicken burger spot?
Chicken burger spot. Everyone with those tattoos on their leg, they're from riding the exhaust on their motorcycle. Where are you going? Like, there's only like 3 places to go here. You don't need a motorcycle. But apparently the rest of the island is gorgeous.
You've been to a full moon party?
Yeah, I did.
You've seen those fire skipping ropes? Have you seen that they light the skipping rope on fire?
Uh-huh.
Like, what dummy's going to jump in here next? Some drunk guy comes, I'm doing it. Then they just pull the rope tight.
Fire wedgie. I like seeing the guys in Gyeongju or whatever when they're doing, like, the guy swallows one thing or he juggles some fire. Like,
in Gyeongju?
You got to get the Thai guys here. Yeah, they have clowns and street performers and stuff.
All right,
We used to go to the party town, and then with kids, we'd go to the other side of the island, and it's completely secluded. It's more family oriented. Yeah, it's perfect. There was one beach we went to, and it's like way, way down on the other side. Basically, like, you've got the party town over here, and the other stuff is, or it's the other way around. The other stuff is like on the exact opposite side of it.
Yeah.
And it's a beach. It belongs, I think it's part of a reserve or whatever?
Resort?
Yeah. No, not a resort. Like a
nature reserve.
Yeah.
Oh, no, okay. Green
nature
belt.
Reserve. Yeah, something like that. So you can't, it's not meant for development. So the huts that are there are very basic. You know, they've got some concrete stuff, but you can't start digging up stuff and whatever. So and so we ran into another family there. They had three kids. They were from Australia, and we spent like a week there, and our kids were playing, and we were just hanging out.
Awesome.
Was the best holiday ever. Just, you know, a week on the beach and eat whenever you want to eat, sleep whenever you want to sleep.
Oh, the yeah. food. The yeah. food. Oh,
dude,
my God.
After 2 weeks, we came back here. I was like, a new man. Like, do that every 3 months and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
One of my probably worst memories or craziest memories is when we went with you guys or you met us there or something. We went to the full moon party and we couldn't get a place to stay, so we came back in those speedboats. I thought I was going to die on one of them.
Oh, yeah. I was
like, this is what's in the news. Oh, 20 dumb foreigners overloaded in a 7-seat speedboat.
Shit-faced at 7 in the morning.
Bombed on a 3-day bender. Boat snaps in half and they all drown. I was like, oh,
that was the...
God. And, you know, the people are going... Just bouncing from the waves and oh shit, man, this is not good.
My
parents remember advised against this decision.
Don't fall asleep on this boat. You get bounced
because they made it where now if you go for the parties, you got to book like minimum of a week. Where you used to be able to just go for the night, stay the night, and come back, but now they say you got to book 3 days before and 3 days after.
Well, you used to just walk in and leave whenever you please. No.
Oh, but you gotta either take a boat from Samui or somewhere to get there.
Oh. Okay.
So,
you're staying off the island. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're staying there, like, you used to be able to go and get two nights, the night before, party, the night of, party, and leave the next day. Mm. But all those guest houses and stuff, guys said, you got to stay 1 week minimum. And they cranked the prices up. And then it was half moon, black moon, full moon, dirty moon, whatever.
Sack moon.
So you now it's that where you got to book at least 5 to 7 nights, and it's just way too expensive.
Yeah.
Where
you just go for 2 nights. Thing and, only once.
Yeah.
We went only once when prior to having kids, and it wasn't that crazy back then.
It was once is enough.
Yeah,
you don't need any more than that. Wake up with fucking Mike Tyson tattoo on your face.
I think more than even going to party would just be going stone sober and just walk and just observe how many of the people, fucking crazy people there are.
You want a bucket?
Pill. Shit, how many? Viagra, cocaine, pill.
Hey, I'll take a bucket. Which one do you want? The Tom Cruise go fuck your mother bucket. Have you seen those? The names of the buckets, it's all the exact same drink. It's like Red Bull, Sangsum, and Coke. Outrageous. But they got hilarious names on them.
I was never really into the party scene there. I went to a couple of those, but
it's a nightmare. My liver is still crying. It sheds tears every night from 2010. That was New Year's too.
I was going to say one of them I went to was New Year's Eve.
Yeah, that was
in the full moon.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just too much. Mm. And we had to try and protect our wives in the
No. New Year's was with the French boys there.
Oh, okay. Well, the one with the wives, I was like, this is just a babysitting duty because there's way too much crazy stuff going on here.
Yeah. Good times. You want to wrap her up?
Yeah.
That's what she said. Anyways, dude, listen, thanks for coming. I think we can do another one.
Yeah,
in a couple months.
Let me know.
it's nice to hang out and connect with some local dads. Man. Good luck going forward with the crypto father.
Thanks. Okay?
Keep bringing those fucking dollars in, man. It's inspiring. I gotta get my shit back in order and get.
Yeah, get some crypto, man.
Yeah.
Some crypto, because it's gonna get wild. I think this year, towards the end of this year, maybe next year. Michael Saylor's talking about 2000. It's going to drag on to 2026. I don't know if it will, but with the institutional investment that's coming in now, it's going to get pretty wild. I think this could be the biggest, but probably. Like projections are, you know, 3.5x on Bitcoin alone, and then you've got all the other smaller coins that are going to be pumping because of the market cap being so little. And usually, you know, Bitcoin finishes pumping, and then that money kind of floats over into all the alt coins.
Yeah,
sure.
There's another.
What are the, just maybe before setting her down, Ethereum and what are the next ones? Dogecoin still big or what?
Yeah. Solana is a pretty big one. Solana's been pumping like crazy. So a lot of people are, you know, calling Solana the next Ethereum.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff on that. But there's a lot of coins. The one I'm invested in is Meowcoin. It's a weird name and a lot of people think it's a meme coin. It's not. It's a proof of work. So it's you have to mine it. Mm. And the guys that are working on it are pretty strict about how it runs. They want to implement. They want to keep it very pure and just mining. Because there are ASIC miners, which are the computational devices that you just mine Bitcoin, which is very difficult to do. And you can't, like, you have to invest, you know, a minimum of whatever, $3,000. Mm. And then you're in constant deficit. You can't make money off of it. So if you invest like 100K into mining equipment on Bitcoin, then you'll be making some profits. Otherwise, forget about it. But so mining with GPUs, just graphics cards that you can set up at home, can still be profitable. But so MeowCoin basically is a project. They're supporting, they're donating money to shelters, animal shelters, every week. So miners basically mine the blocks, and part of each block is sent into their vault, and then they take part of it and donate it to animal shelters. That's the whole goal of the project. But moving forward, they're planning to do stuff like what is it, pedigree for farm animals and stuff like that. You know, farmers need to keep track of, especially when it comes to breeding animals, right? They want to know where these whatever cows, horses, or dogs came from and what their lineage is and stuff like that. So they're hoping to to put all that on the blockchain.
Cool.
Because you can't alter it, right?
Yeah.
So they're kind of going that direction.
Awesome. So if you're on the fence about getting some coins, don't be a
meow
pussy.
Coin it is.
Don't be a pussy and get some meow coin. Nice. All right, dude, we got to let's wrap her up here. Yeah, thanks very much for coming, and we'll catch up soon.
All right.
Thanks for listening. Peace.